Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Jocelyn Sambira at United Nations headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's program, a timeline produced by UN Women has been nominated for a top internet award, and barriers persist for Saudi women who want to work. But first, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has expressed deep alarm at a widespread pattern of rallies in Burundi where members of the ruling party's youth wing chant about impregnating and killing their opponents. Zaidrat al-Hussein said the organized nature of these marches, coupled with reports of serious human rights violations, lay bare the campaign of terror being waged in the African country. Meanwhile, video has been circulating on social media showing more than 100 members of the Imbonerakure youth militia repeating similar slogans. Matthew Wells spoke to Scott Campbell of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights about the situation on the ground.
What's concerning about the video that circulated on social media over the last couple of weeks is it appears to be the tip of the iceberg of a much wider trend of gatherings of the Imbonerakure, often in the presence of state authorities, political party leaders, or the president of the Senate, government administrators, where the songs, chants, or variations thereof are sung repeatedly by the Imbonerakure. The concern is that this is going on in different provinces across the country, and that it has been going on, we're learning now, for perhaps in some areas as long as 2 years.
So obviously the concern is that these youths, others in Burundi, might actually act on these words and turn them into reality.
Well, that is the concern. I mean, there's a very long and ugly history, of course, in Burundi and in the sub-region of incitement to hatred, incitement to violence, including sexual violence, leading to reality. And of course, there have been any number of incidents of mass killings, mass atrocities in Burundi and in Rwanda in the sub-region. So that's clearly what the High Commissioner is trying to warn today through his press statement, is that there are signs that harken back to previous incidents of mass atrocities, and now it's time for the international community to act. In fact, this isn't the first time the High Commissioner has rung the alarm bell, but he's doing it loudly and clearly today based on what we see emerging as a trend across the country of organized gatherings, rallies of youth aligned with the president's political party and clearly chanting and singing hate speech, speech that incites to violence, which could include mass sexual violence.
Zaid said also that this does amount to a campaign of terror. Those are strong words. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the Imbonerakure de facto control much of the interior of the country, the hills of Burundi. They are fairly well organized throughout the country and have been intimidating anyone who would oppose the views of the president's party, the CNDD-FDD, as it's known. There have been numerous cases of disappearance, of torture, and of arrest and detention by the Imbonerakure, often working in conjunction with the police, the intelligence forces known as the SNR, and others. And this has spread terror throughout the country and has led to now over 400,000 people leaving the country.
An interactive timeline chronicling the accomplishments of women over the centuries has been nominated for a Webby, the leading international award honoring excellence on the Internet. Produced by UN Women, it showcases contributions dating back hundreds of years that trailblazing women made in a wide range of fields, from art to science and literature to law. UN Women invites everyone to visit the Webby site, which covers complex social issues, and vote for one of this year's nominees. Liz Scafidi spoke with Jaya Jiwatram, the digital and interactive media specialist at UN Women, to find out why, among other things, they chose to begin the timeline at 400 BC.
Our main intention to go that far back in history was to drive an overall message, which is regardless of which point of history you're looking at, where someone's from, which age you're looking at, which field you're looking at, women make enormous contributions in their field. And the second part of the message we wanted to drive at was also to show that even though women have made enormous contributions over the centuries, there are still many gaps, and there's still a lot we need to do to unlock women's potential.
I see that you've highlighted women from different pockets of the world, including Mexico, Russia, New Zealand, and Japan. Those are just a couple. Do you specifically search for women with a view to global representation?
There were actually a number of incredible women that we looked at as we were conducting our research. And we did want to strike not just the regional and thematic diversity, but there was a lot of thought put behind the woman that we picked. There's one common thread that exists among all of them, which is they all, against all odds, against discrimination in their environment, managed to still contribute in a way that affects the lives of others or that sets the chain in motion for something else, whether it's in the field of science or in health or even in the law.
What do you hope to achieve with the timeline?
I would hope the timeline brings awareness to UN Women's work and our cause. We cannot really achieve a sustainable environment. We cannot achieve stronger economies and healthier societies if we do not include the other half of humanity.
So why is it important that this timeline be commended with the Webby?
Really to drive awareness. This is really allowing us to reach a different audience. And just to give you an example, just the People's Choice Award on its own gets usually millions of votes every year. And so we're getting plenty of eyeballs. And the most we can really ask for at this stage is for people to read our content and check out the other nominees too, because it's a great inspiration. There's a lot of other social causes. And really, we just hope for people to gain a sense of understanding of the work that we're doing, but also the best case scenario is to step away and do something in their lives to achieve gender equality.
Barriers to women's full workplace participation persist in Saudi Arabia, despite UN data showing that economic growth improves with a more diverse workforce. That's what Muna Abu Suleiman, founder and co-host of Kalam Nawam, a popular social issues program on Arab television, told Bruce Edwards of the International Monetary Fund, or IMF. In 2012, a decree issued by King Abdullah authorizing women to work in retail helped transform millions of lives, and the recently launched Vision 2030 Poverty Reduction Program is encouraging more women to enter the labor market. Ms. Abu Suleiman told Mr. Edwards that Arab women should be free to achieve their goals without cultural or economic barriers.
So there's a lot of female YouTubers that are making a lot of money by creating content, and they're individuals, so they don't follow, for example, a company, and they're young and they're, you know, millennials, and they're looking at different ways of conveying messages and creating an income. Then we have the traditional economy, which is the labor force, and you have more women joining the labor force, not enough. I mean, we're not at the levels where it is deemed to be a more equal representation. Part of it because there aren't that many jobs that are being created, new jobs. And so the demand for a labor force has gone down, and it's expected to go down more with automation and robots. And I think that we're going to get a lot of unemployment in both genders.
The population is very young, right?
Yes.
Saudi Arabia. So 2/3, I think, are under the age of 30.
Yes.
Or something like that. So is this something that, you know, the gender segregation thing, is this something that young people speak a lot about?
I think more than the young age, I think it's more about whether you live in an urban city or you live in a rural area. So people in the rural area, which is 40% of the population, are more segregated. I think urban centers now have loosened up a lot of the laws that were meant to keep males and females separate. We still have males and females separate in the educational system and sometimes at work, but women need their own space to work at. So they can join the company, but they need to have their own space rather than have a mixed environment where males and females would have the same cubicle, for example.
So a lot of the arguments that we hear about gender equality, you know, in North America and Europe, they're all about the economic benefit of bringing more women into the economy. Can women, do you think, boost Saudi Arabia's economy, or should gender equality be more about human rights?
Data says that when women join the workforce, economic growth occurs. I don't think people believe that. I think what people believe is that if a woman comes in, she's taking a job away from a man, especially that we have high unemployment for men. Also in parts of the Arab world, not just Saudi Arabia, I'm talking about the Arab world. So for me, it should be more about human rights. Somebody asked me, what would be a utopian day? And I said, a utopian day would be for a woman to be able to realize her full potential in the way that she wants it. For example, we have women who are engineers, women who are interested in homemaking, whatever you're interested in, it doesn't matter. But you're able to do what you need to do as you wish without any cultural or economic restrictions. And I think that's a human rights issue versus economic issue.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.